There's some other things going on too, including there's a Name Buddies show contest. I was coming up from New York today, and I was listening to the Buddy Vicevich show. I don't ordinarily get the opportunity. Well, I mean, I love the show, but sometimes I'm busy. But I was in the car, so I get to hear a lot of the Buddy show. And he has to name his show. He's having a contest to name the show. And it made me think of a number of things, including, what is the name of this show? Do we actually have a name? We don't really have a name, do we?
No.
We just call it the afternoon show with Bruce and Colin. Is that what it's called?
Okay. I guess so.
I think it's good that we're a show with no name. We've been through the desert in a show with no name. I think that's good. But Buddy says that he has to name his show. He's going to have a new name for his show. When you hosted it, it was called Connecticut Today.
Yeah.
And then when he took it over, it was called the All New
Connecticut Today.
Yeah.
It's been almost a year.
Well, they could,
going on a year since he started.
They didn't want to change it to the stale and predictable Connecticut Today, so they're looking for a new name. And
are you implying that it's stale and predictable?
No, I just said it's not all new anymore. Oh, I mean, then you don't want to say, well, instead of being all new, it's stale and predictable. But now this is the difference between Buddy and us. He says that it might not be able to be the official name because Infinity Management has to make the final decision about what the new name is. Well, first of all...
What?
First of all, in saying Infinity Management or Infinity or something like that, I mean, he makes it sound like Mel and Sumner or something have to sign off on this thing, you know? Like the guys at Black Rock. Decide what Buddy's show is going to be called. You know, which I don't think is really true. I mean, I think when we say Infinity Management, we're talking about Steve Salhaney, who sits up in the corner office here and has a psychological age of 14. You know, I mean... That's who Infinity is. We're talking about somebody who this whole decision-making process might have to be explained to him with hand puppets. But
I don't understand. What do you mean the name of the show?
But,
you mean we have a show?
But that's the first thing. But the second thing, can you imagine? I mean, if we were going to name our show, can you imagine asking management whether it was okay or not? We can call it whatever we want to call it. What are they going to do? We go on the air every day and say, welcome to McHale's Navy. What are they going to do? They're going to come down the hall and make us stop? They're going to fire us eventually, but I mean, there's always that. But really, I mean, you know, we could call the show McHale's Navy if we wanted to. What do you mean Infinity Management has to approve it? When is that the case? But anyway, I was thinking we should try to come up with a name for Buddy's show because, you know, if you win, you get dinner for two somewhere.
What?
If you hit the other end, you get dinner for two.
That seems terribly cheesy.
Dinner
for two, that's all?
You turn down dinner for two somewhere?
No.
And Buddy said that if the station wouldn't provide it, he would pay for it himself. I mean, I hope it's not like at participating Red Lobsters or something. I hope it's someplace kind of nice.
We hope it's not someplace with, like, a mascot.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, but anyway, I throw that out as a possibility. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. We'll also talk a little bit more about the Grammys. But, I'm happy to talk some more about it. I don't want to re-debate the causes of the war. Because that was, the first half hour was boring. And I take responsibility for the fact that it was boring. It's my fault that it was boring. It's also Jason's, it's all the caller's fault, too. But it's equal amount of fault. And the reason that the show, first half of the hour of the show was boring is because we're in the middle of a war on terrorism, and we can't use the same standards for an entertaining show that we'd ordered. We have to reanalyze all of our standards and say, look, you know, we might have to go on there with something that's really boring.
You know what we are, though? We're the war show.
Yeah, we're the war show.
War show.
You know, that was an interesting turn of phrase psychologically. Actually, I sort of think that you can make the case that the only way to look at President Bush's performance, since nothing he said made any sense, the only way to look at him on Russert is psychologically, and just sort of try to figure out who he is psychologically, because he's starting to look kind of, he's got all these kind of herky-jerky movements now. I know I'm one to talk, but he's got all these kind of herky-jerky, he looks like me, that's what's disturbing, he's like, you know, he's full of ticks.
That's pretty frightening.
Yeah, that is frightening, the idea that he's, you know, he's in command of weapons of mass destruction.
Did you see 60 Minutes last night?
No.
What was that? A piece on evangelicals, Bush was featured in that.
Well, they love
featured
him.
In it. They still
sort of love him. What did they say? Yeah. What did they say about evangelicals?
Well, this was about the rapture and about the various books that are written about it.
Is it coming?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, that's what these people are saying anyway. It's fairly soon. Probably see it in our lifetime.
Speaking of the rapture, you know another person who has a red face? As a matter of fact, I challenged him to call the show.
Not that again.
Of course, yeah, this would involve, of course, you know, coming out of his bunker and, you know, pulling a cotton out of his ears and stuff. JP, the Doomsday Economist, he was always kind of...
Oh, I thought you meant the gentleman that we were referred to last week.
Oh, I mean that minister?
Yeah.
You know, the more I thought about him, the more he made me mad. I could get mad
really?
At him all. I can get mad at him all over again.
It's funny, it didn't show the other day.
I know. I had like a little Buddy Vicevich moment on the air. But,
well, I wouldn't go that far.
But, you know, he stepped too with me, too. It was not entirely my fault.
No, no,
well,
I know.
Anyway, you know, J.B. the Doomsday Economist was always touting this book by Lori Milroy.
Right.
And the point of the book, among other things, was that the CIA had consistently underestimated the dangerousness of Saddam Hussein. And that they had lowballed and understated how dangerous he was and how many weapons he had. And which, when you think about it, is kind of funny because George Tenet spent all of last week saying, yes, we did too, lowball. Yes, we did. We did say he wasn't. I mean, that's a good position to have, that you knew that Saddam Hussein was not all that dangerous. And so a lot of people are trying to claim that that was what they knew, or at least that they didn't provide the Lori Milroy kind of information claiming that Saddam was more dangerous than he really was. There are a number of people I challenged to call this show. All of them, as far as I can tell, are obsessive recluses with no lives, so it shouldn't be that hard. One of them is JP. And then last Monday, I think, I got down on my knees. Remember this? I got down on my knees and begged Nina, Dennis Kucinich worshiping Nina,
right,
to forgive me and to agree to call the show.
Yep.
And she was supposed to call the show the next day. And it never happened, did it?
Nope.
So...
No, it didn't.
This was the fact that I got down on my knees and I begged and begged and begged. I humiliated myself. I mean, do you realize how much credibility? Well, I never had any credibility around here. But if I'd had any credibility around here, you know,
nobody. Look, don't start that.
Yeah.
If you could be down on your hands and knees and 12 people could walk by that window and go,
yeah,
it's Colin, and keep right on walking and not even bat an eye.
At least he's not thinking of his pants.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, they see me dance. Okay. So it wasn't that big a deal that I got down on my knees. But I'd like to think it was a big deal.
Well, it is. It's a big deal.
I humbled myself. I wasn't afraid to humble myself.
And the people in the newsroom would have been impressed, too.
I'm not too proud to humble myself. You know, I got down on my knees. And I begged this woman, and she said she would call the show, and she hasn't. She hasn't.
Perhaps she hasn't found that moment when she had something that she wanted to share.
It doesn't make any difference. She just said she would call the show. So if she doesn't go to the show today, she's a lying trollop.
Well, that certainly will entice her to phone.
I'm just saying that to be provocative. All right, we can talk to the callers now.
The
entertaining portion of this particular segment is now over.
Okay, let's go to John on a cell phone. John.
Dude, hello? You're on the air, dude.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. Oh, I just saw a play at the Irish Rep yesterday, so I'm prepared to do this. If you're scared of going to the dentist, I've got a great solution for you. Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld. That's right. Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld right there in Avon. If you're a coward and you don't go to Dr. Jerry Rosenfeld, you're an idiot. He specializes in people who are afraid of the dentist. He's good dedicated to making your experience so very comfortable. He provides headphones with your personal choice of music, so you bring in a bit of the Wolf Tones or the Chieftains, and then he works on your mouth. The future of dentistry has changed. The already high standards of care have just been raised with the breakthrough technology of the new dental laser. Welcome to the comfort zone. No drill, no noise, no numbness. Rosenfeld is delighted to offer the new dental laser to his patients. Quicker and quieter, the state-of-the-art water laser replaces the drill in most instances. Over 20 years of teaching and hands-in-the-mouth experience, now he's got the water laser too. Exceptional dentistry and maximum comfort. Bridges, crowns, beaching, or bonding, it doesn't matter. Your care and comfort is the chief priority of Dr. Rosenfeld and his staff, Linda and Magdalena. Star 674-0707 for an appointment for the smile you've always wanted and the atmosphere that says success. Most insurance is accepted, located in Old Avon Village on Route 44 in the sign with a silver toothbrush. Easy parking in some evening hours. Dr. Jerry, the dentist who caters to cowards. Call today, 674-0707.
Folks,
this. I mean, we can get back to those in a second. But a few minutes ago, right before the show started, my dog Malcolm and I decided to go for a little bit of a walk around the off-world colony. Now, the results of this little test may be impugnable or questionable simply because a lot of the animal, the wildlife around here is genetically altered or living on pollutants or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we sort of got an opportunity to answer the question, how fast can rabbits really run? Well, it turns out, really fast. As a matter of fact, the more I think about it, that probably was not a normal rabbit. Because, I mean, this rabbit, Malcolm kind of stumbled on it, this rabbit. And this rabbit, I wouldn't even want to, I mean, I would like to see the radar gun on this rabbit.
Yeah.
Rabbit got really moving pretty fast.
Malcolm's pretty fast.
Yeah. Oh, it wasn't even close. But a lot of the rabbits, a lot of the wildlife here at the off-world colony where we work, because of the highly toxic environment, they've had to adapt. And they have, you know, they may even be sort of turbocharged internally in some way.
Yeah.
It's probably not like normal rabbits. The rabbits on the Teletubbies, I believe, are given drugs.
Is that a possibility for these rabbits?
Well, these rabbits here may have been given performance-enhancing drugs. The rabbits on the Teletubbies are just drugged, so they'll hang around.
You don't suppose, by any chance, that these rabbits might have come from down the street?
Down the street at Trump's?
Yeah.
Didn't I make some kind of, Trump, by the way, not Donald Trump, the guy from The Apprentice, but Trump's is this company here located here near us at the off-world colony. But I thought I made some kind of pledge not to say bad things about Trump anymore.
I didn't say you had to say anything bad about Trump's.
We don't know what they get up to over there, and we do think that they're involved in genetic engineering. We believe that Trump, one of the sort of hangar facilities over there, is where they faked the moon landing. But I thought I'd vowed not to get into problems with Trump anymore. And I'm trying to stick to a few of these vows.
All right. Here's
All right. Well, I'm going to let you be Jean-Luc Picard on this one.
Hey, Harry on a cell phone. Hi.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Good. One quick comment and one quick question. Justin Timberlake, why is it when he got his award, I kept thinking, and in doing the apology deal, I kept thinking about Pete Rose. And the question is...
No, I kept thinking about a doctor. Was it Dr. Smith from Lost in Space? What was his name? It was Dr. Smith?
Yeah.
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 I'm sorry. Please don't hurt me. Anyway, go ahead.
And then the other thing was, you were talking about weapons of mass destruction, and my question is, do you think Janet Jackson's nipple ring should be considered a weapon of mass destruction? Expound on that.
It's not the nipple ring, it's the nipple shield. The shield is what's important here. I didn't even know there were such things as nipple shields until this whole thing started.
Did you?
Gee, I didn't. No.
I mean, you know, I try to be aware of
stuff. Kind of gives a whole new look at some new meaning for some Star Trek expressions.
Or Strategic Defense Initiative missile shields. But apparently, nipple shields, if you have a piercing, the way that it works is...
Well, I can hardly wait to hear this.
I read up on this. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think of something to analogize it to.
Nipple talk.
In the world of hardware, there would be a number of things that you can analogize it to, but the shield goes on first. And then you put whatever thing you're going to insert into your piercing, And so it kind of fastens the shield on that.
Sort of like a hubcap?
Yeah, that's my understanding. And that she bought the nipple shield in Houston when she was there for the Super Bowl. And that she also, in the same place that she bought the nipple ring, nipple shield, bought a number of other things, including a riding crop.
I'd like to comment on the Bush speech.
Okay, comment.
Well... What I thought was funny was when Tim Russert said to him, well, but you did not serve in Vietnam, did you? And Bush said, no, I did not, but I flew a jet plane and I enjoyed it.
Yes, I noticed that phrase here, that he enjoyed it.
It kind of reminded me of Starker from Get Smart, you know. I flew the jet plane and I went vroom vroom.
It's not a reference a lot of people are going to get, but that's good.
Kind of going back old there. All right, thank you.
But because of George W. Bush, Tuscaloosa was a safer play. Well, right. Maybe not even that.
And actually, significantly, it's funny that you should mention that, because that panel that's supposed to investigate the intelligence failures, Ed Platt has been named to that panel. So, the chief.
Here is Dan.
The chief is going to look into it, all right? Yeah. So I think we can all relax. They're going to use the cone of silence, too, for the meeting.
Exactly.
How you doing?
Good. Right.
Good. Just in response to, I don't know, he was a few callers back, the one that was talking about the using...
To John from Farmington.
John?
Hi, fellas. I just wonder, because of the fact that you have so many interruptions with traffic and weather and all the other stuff, what would you do if you had the time slot, such as... Rush Limbaugh has,
mm-hmm.
Where he controls pretty much everything that comes through and everything else, and how would you handle that?
Well,
This is sort of more like ADHD radio. The whole concept is that you don't sustain one particular line of thought for more than, you know, 3.5-4 minutes.
Okay.
I'm not even sure we're wired. I mean, actually, both Bruce and I have had the experience of separately of doing shows where you have longer. Bruce used to do, both Bruce and I have worked in the 10 to noon slot at various times. And it is,
like
it's
Buddy?
A different, like Buddy. Well, Bruce did that show before Buddy, and I did that show before Dr. Laura, who was before Bruce.
Okay.
So, you know, we've each done that, and also I used to do a show on Sunday nights. If you want the opposite experience from this, I was thinking about this the other day. There was a day when I used to do the show on Sunday nights, and it was like for 3 hours or something, and nobody listened to it. We had like 18 listeners.
Dead zone, yeah.
And there were almost no commercials. And there certainly were no service elements whatsoever. No one cared. The people that were listening to the show were not interested in the weather because they'd never left their houses. And so there was one night that I thought I wasn't going to do it because I was preempted by a Red Sox game. They were out on the West Coast or something like that. Yeah. And I didn't prepare anything. And I didn't really think about it. And I think I went to a Sunday evening barbecue or something and had a couple of glasses of wine. And suddenly I got a call from TIC telling me the game was rained out. And all I had time to do in the amount of time that I had was to drive to the station with no preparation whatsoever. And, you know, by the end of the show, I was, like, reliving my birth and stuff. I mean, just to, you know, have maybe able to fill up the 3 hours. And there was, like, no commercials and no guests and no, you know, no nothing. So then it was like some kind of real prime. It was like psychoanalysis. I mean, I was just lying on the console at the end, crying and talking about things that I'd find in my garage when I was 4 years old and stuff.
And nobody called?
I don't remember. My own position is that nobody called, and I just spoke for 3 hours uninterrupted. But it was something like that. And it wasn't pleasant. I think it's better this way. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
We're out of time. Not really, but I mean, it seemed like a good thing to say. So anyway. Actually, I've come to actually sort of relish the fact that we're constantly interrupted, particularly considering some of the things that our callers are prepared to undertake. I think it's good that we're interrupted a lot. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Well, the NHL All-Star Game was held yesterday, and they talked to the people who watched it, and both of them very liked it very much. It's time for Sport Atois, the very French sports discussion segment of Vic, Monsieur Arnold, Dean, Monsieur Bruce, Durant, and myself, Louis Gascon de la Mer.
Actually, it was more than two. I bet there was
going on in sports.
Quickly, did you see the University of Rhode Island story?
Which one?
The broadcaster for the University of Rhode Island left his equipment, like, outside the bus and didn't have anybody there to claim it. So it was sitting there by itself. So someone got excited and called the police, and they came in, and the bomb squad blew up. It had wires coming out from it, so they blew up all of his equipment.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
What, he forgot it and left it there? Or
he forgot it, and nobody claimed it.
Oh,
so.
My gosh. No, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Actually, some of the equipment that we travel with on the road looks like a bomb. It looks like a poorly made bomb.
It does. It actually does.
You know, as you're checking it through, you know, why we're not strip searched every single time is kind of amazing.
Well, Tim Helmecki said, however, he would, anything like that ever, you know, happened with our stuff, he would hurdle himself on top of it.
Yeah.
To protect the equipment.
No, he said he would hurl on top of it. That's what he said.
Probably more accurate.
Well, it's interesting that the red line now becomes the blue line. In other words, you'd have that whole half of the ice to maneuver. Wake up, Colin. All right, you're not a hockey fan. I give up.
Well, the problem is that not only is hockey boring, but even explanations about how to make hockey less boring are boring.
You know what I think?
What?
I think you should just get rid of the Zamboni. That's what I think. You know, the hell out of the ice.
Allow it during regulation for play. Each team should have a Zamboni, which they could deploy selectively during the game. Then you'd have something.
Yeah, I think you would.
Yeah.